This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Inside Story on BFM 89.9.
Good evening, this is Inside Story with Sharmila Ganesan and Lee Chuinlin. Tonight, where have all the policy debates gone? This comes as Ideas and the Centre for Market Education have expressed concern that substantive, right yet focused policy debates have been lacking lately. So first we hear from Tricia Yeo of Ideas about this very thing, and then we speak to an MP about what it's like to prepare for a solid policy debate. Tell us, would you like to see more substantive policy debates happen in our country? Call 77332900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. This is Inside Story. It is 6:08, and in many ways, the root of our Inside Story today comes from a joint statement by the Institute for Democracy and Economic Affairs, or IDEAS, and the Center for Market Education, CME. And they express concern over the lack of policy debates in Malaysia, and essentially said that many policy decisions related to the political economy are being made without meaningful debate or consideration of long-term impact.
So they gave some examples, including the most recent round of EPF withdrawals, the issue of MySejahtera, the ceiling price for chicken, RTK test price ceiling, the issue of minimum wage. And I think they also, in that same statement, went on to contrast these policies against the more rigorous debates that happened when it comes to talking about, for example, the MOU, which is not a question of political economy, just a question of politics and of perception. And I think it is important to draw that contrast, because while I think it's very easy for all of us to get caught up in the political drama of the day, we are certainly not exempt from that. I think it's important to acknowledge that something like the MOU, while philosophically important, while important for something like political stability, does not have the same impact on our daily lives as the price of chicken. And so contrasting the amount of time that each of these issues is given in Parliament, for example, is actually a very important point to draw out.
It's also just, I hate that I'm saying this, but a lack of sexiness, isn't it? I mean, in the end of the day, the kind of grandstanding that you can sort of perform in these circles when it comes to politics and the kind of disagreements, where else something like ceiling prices, something like EPF withdrawals requires, you use the word rigorous, and that's exactly it. It requires a kind of rigor. But it also reflects on issues that actually impact the rakyat. And that's why when you look at the statement put out by IDEAS, they talk a lot about rakyat-focused policies, the impact on the people. And I think that distinction between politics and political economy is actually an important one, because when we keep saying bread and butter issues, that's essentially what it is, isn't it?
That, and having a debate and hearing from specific players with specific agendas, which everybody has, is important because it also helps to tease out the real issue from the political grandstanding. Because honestly, looking at something like the EPF, for instance, that decision was not made independent or free, I think, of political pressures, of this understanding of, you know, wanting to appeal to a broad voter base, of wanting to make funds available to people in a way that might be more immediately gratifying, but not necessarily the best decision in the long term, you know. So having debates and hearing from people and actually hearing how substantive those reasons and the reasoning in general is also an important education in, for us, distinguishing what is actually substantive debate, debate that speaks to the point of the issue, and not just grandstanding, not just political drama and dramatics. And without the back and forth that we should be seeing on these issues, we don't actually have an opportunity to tease that out.
And I think the other thing that has happened for us, right, is that for 2.5 years now, we've not actually been operating under a quote-unquote regular parliamentary system, right? We've had changes in government.
Parliament wasn't in session for a long time.
Parliament wasn't in session. We had an emergency. Decisions had to be made on quick notice. So while it's tempting to level the blame on parliamentarians, and of course there is a fair amount of responsibility there in terms of what gets brought up, I think it is true that we haven't been in usual times. And I do think that moving forward, if, you know, if we talk about endemicity in terms of what life is like. I would like to see, now that we're no longer tied to only talking about reactive policies, you know, what is going to be put in place? What are we going to see when it comes to long-term issues that do need this kind of debate? So we're essentially going to unpack that today. Very shortly, we'll be joined by Trisha Yeo, CEO of Ideas. But we'd like to hear from you. Would you like to see more substantive policy debates happen in our country? Call 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio.
Bombing frustrated minds. BFM 89.9.
It is 6:14. You're listening to Inside Story with Sharmila and Lynn. And today we're talking about the role of policy debates, particularly when it comes to matters of political economy. And this comes from a statement released by the Institute for Democracy and Economic Affairs, as well as the Center for Market Education. And so we'll be very shortly speaking with Trisha Yeo from Ideas on that. But we would like to hear from you as well. Would you like to see more substantive policy debates happen here? You can call 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Joining us now is Trisha Yeo, CEO at the Institute for Democracy and Economic Affairs, or Ideas. Trisha, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
So this joint statement where you expressed concern over the lack of policy discussions, particularly related to our political economy, talk to us about what prompted this.
Thanks so much. Yes, I think we have been seeing in the recent month or two a whole spate of different economic policy decisions that have been made without a lot of serious public discourse. In fact, I think the most serious public discourse perhaps comes from, you know, these sorts of interviews on media, both radio and on TV. But this policy discourse could be actually better done when it involves important stakeholders. We are seeing the public conversation in parliament, perhaps among the political parties. The parties themselves seem to not have been very rigorously raising these issues. And so, especially in the last month or so, this was an observation. And therefore, yeah, we decided that we were actually lamenting this, when we met up, both the CEO of CME and myself. And so while talking about this, we realized that this is something that really needs to be expressed more clearly. And I think also to encourage, right, leaders, political leaders particularly, to come up and tell them and to remind them that there's so much that can be discussed when it comes to policy. Don't restrict the kind of debate in the public only to matters concerning the MOU, the expiration of the MOU, when elections is going to happen in this year. And we do know that there have been so many different state elections that have taken place of late. So there's a lot of political analysis. But I think what really prompted it was these decisions that have not been discussed in a particularly in-depth manner.
So in the statement, what I found really interesting is there was a distinction made between the ongoing discussions surrounding politics, GE15, the MOU, and how those discussions are often quite public and robust, but not so much on the kind of rakyat-focused policies that we're otherwise talking about. What effect does this particular focus on politics over political economy create?
I think it creates a very short-term view of things. It makes people think in only very, maybe 6 month periods down the line, without thinking about what the long-term consequences are. And there are so many decisions that are being made which will have long-term consequences. So many things to do with the economy. We are experiencing inflation, a rise in the price of goods. There's a lot of, there's a lot of talk, for example, in the market about labor concerns. How do we match the labor shortage that we are experiencing, particularly with regards to foreign labor, with the actual employment needs of the market and of businesses here? There's also going to be a long-term implication of the Russo-Ukraine war and how this will also lead to shortages and, the supply chain. So many, many issues that will require long-term thinking. That's one of the implications when we focus too much on politics. The debate becomes very superficial. And I think also our political leaders tend to think that what they can offer to the rakyat is also very short-term. So it perpetuates this kind of short-term thinking, which is not healthy for the long-term economic health of the country. And we really do need to think about that long-term, because there's so much to be discussed. There's a discussion over energy, for example. Are we really going to create a more sustainable environment, but yet we're still so coal dependent? And there's so much about ESG, for example, which again goes into long-term thinking. And I think we really need to get on that bandwagon very quickly.
So you highlighted a few things there. What kind of issues do you think are perhaps top of mind or most relevant currently that you'd like to see policy debates on, particularly when we talk about this rakyat focus?
Sure. So I'll give you a few examples that we put in the statement. I'll also talk about a couple of others that were not in the statement. So I think the one that was of front and center of mind was actually this EPF withdrawal. So we know throughout the pandemic that the EPF withdrawal has been an instrument used by the government to allow for greater pocket money, right, in circulation. We also know that this is not an instrument that actually many other countries have chosen to adopt. And the recent, permission to withdraw the EPF at the back of the floods actually depleted 40 billion ringgit of EPF funds in an instant. And we really believe that this puts at risk the future financial stability and retirement of future households, the poorer households in particular. And then there was also this whole management of My Sejahtera, which I don't think has yet been resolved. I mean, it came out in the media, but it hasn't really been resolved. I think that's something that's still in the works. But the main point is that what were the agreements between government and the company that was supposed to undertake this massive job, but yet without a very clear terms and conditions of the agreement? Who does the data belong to? There is, concerns over the misuse of data, lowering public trust in government institutions as a result. So what the other thing I wanted to also share, which is not in the statement, which is also something that we are very concerned with, would be just generally, what is the kind of economic framework that is going to situate Malaysia in the larger international context? We have ratified recently the RCEP. There are negotiations to ratify the CPTPP as well. And there are economies like Taiwan and China and the UK that have indicated interest, not just indicated interest, actually, that have already applied to join this membership. And what will the implications be on Malaysia if we are to take this up? More importantly, how are we going to position ourselves to compete internationally while being members of these international agreements? This kind of policy debate, a very rigorous one, that is taking place among the political leaders within government, within the administration, among the opposition leaders as well, we would like to see this, because it is really crucial to these key decision-making processes in the future.
Let's expand on that, and also on the word rigorous. What is the specific value of having not just policy debates, but ones that are actually rigorous, right? How does it shape the final outcome?
So I think the pandemic also changed a lot of things. I think we also have to take that into consideration. But what a rigorous policy debate, what would that look like? It would look basically like this, where you have the potential for meaningful public contributions and discourse. So a ministry, for example, that is going to draw out plans for the coming year. And I do know that the Ministry of Finance, being the chief ministry that is drawing up the budget, which is the biggest thing that everyone talks about every year, does do these consultations. But what I often hear as well among, not just like in the market, business places and in civil society, is that this public engagement is not very meaningful. So the experience that people have while engaging with government, and I say this across the board, right? So federal, state and local government as well, is that it's a very ticking the box method. So they just go through the steps that are required. But what you could do is really get the public to come in. And there have been some experiments of this across the country. The public can come in, say you go down to the community level and you ask them, okay, we have this amount of money. What do you want to do with it? What is the project that is of most keen interest to you? How can the money be best spent? And then really meaningfully monitoring it and tracking it. So there are scores of these examples of public discussion and public participation at all levels. At the local level, at the local government level, that's how it would look like. At the state government level, they could also do that by having a regular platform for members of the different, you know, associations, private sector, and so on to contribute their views. At the federal level, it could also mean that these associations come forward with proposals, and the proposals are meaningfully absorbed. And it has to be done in a way that's systematic. So going topic by topic, say there's been talk, for example, I think the Ministry of Finance has put out some verbal signs about the return of the GST, for example. So that's just in one interview. How can we level up that debate and really think about the questions of why is a return of the GST necessary? What are the concerns? And I think there's a level of transparency as well, or like a level of reality where the government can actually level with its citizens and say that, okay, this is as much that we can afford. We know that the next few years are going to be very difficult for us. We've been depending on petroleum money for a very long time. This is what our future sustainability is going to look like. So let's have this discourse. And it really requires a change of mind as well, like thinking differently, thinking systematically. And this is where, I mean, I hope that independent think tanks like us can play a role where we shape that platform, create that systematic platform so that there is this rigorous debate.
So the statement also did say, and I'm quoting here, how these important decisions cannot be made in the context of an emergency and without a proper debate. By always acting in response to an emergency, structural reforms are not addressed. So how would you like to see more proactive policies take shape in the future?
Yeah, so of course, again, the pandemic was something that was unexpected. So this was across the board. So it's not just Malaysia that experienced this, countries across the region. And this is something that I'm actually writing about specifically for Malaysia, right? How did we respond? How was our coordination efforts across the federal government and also vertically? So both horizontally and vertically. These decisions cannot be made in the context of an emergency, that's what we said, without proper debate. So many times, so my suggestion was a great example, actually. There was something that was required at that moment in time, and everyone just complied with it. But at the end, we had a situation where, like I said earlier, it was very unclear as to what the terms and conditions are, what were the terms of service. And structural reforms that are really required in the future would be very difficult questions over issues of public procurement. So we've done a lot of work on the transparency of public procurement, how this can be made more transparent and accountable so that the legitimate companies that should be winning certain bids are able to do so. So procurement is a big area. I also have to raise state-owned enterprises. Basically, where does the government see the government-linked companies, GLCs, featuring in all of its efforts, emergency relief or other kinds of social needs in the future? We also know that many, many of the GLCs are not being effectively monitored. If they're not publicly listed, for example, it's very difficult to understand what their performance efficiencies are. So thinking, having a hard, deep think about what kinds of GLCs the government would like to maintain because they are competitive, and also the kinds of GLCs that perhaps should no longer need to be around, perhaps because they're actually squeezing out the private sector from competing within those very sectors that they are trying to stimulate. So those are two key things already. A third would also be, you know, we talk a lot about digital and tech. I think that's a question. And this is also a research piece that I'm very interested to know about, which is, despite all the talk about upskilling and IRR 4.0 for IRR and making sure that the private sector gets onto the tech bandwagon, how many of these SMEs, actually more small than they are medium, are equipped with the right skills to go fully digital? And we know that many of them are struggling. So how do we give them that structural shift to really move up? And here we are talking about 5G and so on. I think that would be the third thing that I would say. But there are so many other structural issues. I mean, there are many, for example, monopolies that need to be rethought. Like, I think the question about public funds, where are public funds being most efficiently used and disbursed? And are we making good use and accountable use of the funds that are going out? Because if, you know, the economic situation prolongs, given the pandemic and the Russia-Ukraine war, these are questions that we really need to be able to grapple with. And I hope, and I'm open, of course, to having these conversations with the various ministries. Thank you.
Tricia, thanks for speaking with us today. That was Tricia Yeo, CEO at IDEAS. And do send your thoughts our way. After this, we'll be checking in with an MP. So keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Banish fraudulent manoeuvres, BFM 89.9.
It's 6:39. You're listening to Inside Story with Sharmila and Lynn, and we're discussing the role of policy debates today. Specifically, this comes from a statement from IDEAS as well as the Centre for Market Education on needing more substantive policy debate on issues of political economy. And so we thought we'd focus on the second half of our show on what actually goes into making these policy debates happen, the kind of preparation that MPs have to put in place.
Or should
yes. put in place. That's true. And we'll be joined by Wong Chin, who is, of course, MP for Subang, very shortly. Do weigh in. Would you like to see more substantive policy debates happen in our country? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Before we get to our guest, I think we have time for this from Kunbun,
which is about politicians. So Kun Boon says, politicians think only for their survival. They never think beyond after the next election. And I think, you know, this is a criticism that is levied at policymakers and at politicians very often. And I think that it's a very difficult thing to negotiate because, of course, you do have the question of how long you actually need to be or what kind of stability you need to have when in office in order to push things through anyway. And then what are the things that you need to do in order to get that stability? And that seems to be the constant kind of balancing game that we see politicians play one way or the next. The other part of it, of course, is how do you then craft policy that will outlast you? And perhaps because we have had a ruling party in power for a significant chunk of our history as a nation, we've never really had to contend with that question because that issue of continuity previously was always taken as a given. And now that perhaps that's not the case anymore, maybe we need to reconsider how we think about crafting policy.
Yes, but I think that also even within that single party system, right, we've had particular ministries get brought up a lot, things like education policy and how every mm-hmm. minister comes up with a new policy. So I think that there is a need actually for there has always been a need for politicians to think beyond just their terms. Whether or not that gets played out is perhaps a different question. But keep those thoughts coming. Would you like to see more substantive policy debates happen in our country? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Joining us now is Wong Chin, Member of Parliament for Subang. Wong Chin, thanks for being with us today.
Hi guys, how are you?
We're good, thank you. So, as an MP, do you look forward to debating policies in Parliament? Is that a part of your job that you enjoy?
Well, the policy part is actually done at a select committee level. When you debate, it's really debating the legislation. By that time, the legislation is already, you know, the policy behind it is already set in stone and it's coming up in the version of a bill. So policy making for me essentially is, you know, what we teach my interns and what we develop over time and what we put in the manifesto. But the day-to-day management of policies to deal with it in the select committee.
So our central question is really what kind of preparation and research happens before a policy is formulated and then subsequently debated?
Well, you need data and you need to have a good understanding of economics, and in particular behavioral economics nowadays. Then you have this idea, are you central left? Are you far right wing? Are you neoliberal? All that has to be sorted out at that level early on. But if you go into a technical policy debate, then obviously you need data transparency and you need an understanding, a good understanding of budget process. So you can, you can talk about developing a super conductivity highway system or whatever you want. If you don't have money, you don't have the money. So it's a combination of data and data transparency in particular, and then budgetary process as well. Other than the ideological side, which is not very relevant in Malaysia.
How much manpower and resources does all of this preparation and research and data collection require?
A lot. I mean, we don't have that capacity. I mean, I read a lot personally. I do the best I can, but I have three offices and they are predominantly involved in community work and running projects. So everything just has to be done by yourself. You get a good hunch and then you got to call your experts, lawyers, architects, engineers, and get their input, talk to environmentalists. Then over time, you cobble together a very broad-based policy and then narrow it down when it's very specific to an issue that you really want to fight for.
So we spoke earlier with Tricia Yu of Ideas, and she talked a lot about the importance of engagement with stakeholders. Talk to us about that. I mean, what kind of engagement typically does take place? What do those discussions look like?
Generally, you start off whether you're neoliberal or you're not neoliberal. Ideas is neoliberal, I'm not neoliberal. I don't mind the market forces per se, but I'm more interested in social market economy. So I would then talk to people who are interested in that same thing first. So I don't engage the neoliberals because I know where they're going towards, right? So from then onwards, you call your friends, you go to LinkedIn, you call your experts, and you suss them out whether they're actually experts or not. You know, you invite them over for dinner, and then I've been looking at climate change, for instance, right? So I'm very practical because I come from the palm oil industry. My family started in timber, so we understand reforestation, REDD++, and then we talk to ambassadors and we get this cobbled together something. And that is the process. The process is really, there's no fixed formula. You just need to get to the point where you're comfortable with all the numbers and then give a very broad view. And then implementation policy is another different ballgame altogether.
So if we look abroad, we sometimes see politicians using social media to build awareness among members of public when it comes to policymaking, as well as the work that's required. Do you think there's a similar interest here? Is there value in doing this?
I think social media is more or less for promotion of ideas and populism. The actual policy work is much more complicated. You do need a formal background of some sort in as a professional, either accounting or lawyer. And if you are into big data and all that, better still. I mean, I can see the better policymakers seem to have a clear understanding of how to get things done, right? So I don't think social media plays a bigger role than beyond the superficial idea that, yes, we are against, some policies, yes, for climate change improvements and stuff like that.
We're talking about the preparation that goes into debating policy and legislation, in our parliament. We'd like to hear from you. Would you like to see more substantive policy debates happen here? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. We'll continue our conversation with Subang MP Wong Chen after this. So keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Bringing fresh meaning, BFM 89.9.
It's 6:48. You're listening to Inside Story with Sharmila and Lynn, and we're talking about policy debates. So we're essentially hearing from an MP about what goes into making those debates happen, to making them substantive. And we'd like to hear from you. Would you like to see more substantive policy debates happen here in Malaysia? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. We're continuing our conversation with Subang MP Wong Chen. So, as we said, we're talking about this because of a statement from Ideas as well as the Centre for Market Education that talked about the need for substantive policy debates on rakyat-focused issues, which they say have been lacking. How would you respond to that?
No, I totally agree. It is lacking. But there are several reasons for this. One is, of course, the pandemic has taken out 2 years, and people tend to be, they think about, you know, politicians are sensitive to the needs of the people, right? And there's also that 22 months of Pakatan rule where we did not carry out a lot of reforms. So it just seems a bit hypocritical for us to keep harping on the issues when we're given the chance to reform, but we didn't deliver a lot. And on top of that, you throw in the pandemic, you get this sense of vacuum or space with lack of policy being debated.
If we go back to what we started the show with, right, this question of debate, what role do policy debates play in actually shaping the final outcome?
The actual debate in Parliament for the legislation, nothing much, right? As I say, the emphasis for us as MP, the real policy work is being done at the Select Committee. And that depends a lot on whether the Member of Parliament that sits in the Select Committee prepares himself for policy. Otherwise, the other Members of Parliament will raise issues in the media and in the manifesto. That is supposed to be the policy position of politicians and MPs.
So as an opposition MP, what are the specific challenges you face in participating or initiating policy debates?
Well, data is always hard to come by, right? Then you have to calculate and see whether people understand this thing. You know, I mean, at the best of times, some of the policies that I propose may get about 5% of clear understanding what I'm trying to say. Most people are not really that interested, right? Other than the think tanks, of course. But the impact of policy is humongous in Malaysia. You know, I mean, in actual impact, but in terms of popularity or people's interest, minimal. And that's the problem with politicians. You know, you have to appear to be clever to some extent, but also being in the know and also understanding what people really want to hear from you. Yeah. So that's why, you know, that Mr. Kaur Kwan, whatever his name earlier said, that the politicians will say things about policy or trying to promise something just before election, and after election is something different.
Are there then any improvements that you'd like to see in the current structure and format of parliamentary debates? Or, you know, if most of it happens not necessarily inside the day one anyway, then is it fine?
No, I mean, we have to have telecast select committees. That is so important, right? And then we should also demand that MPs come out and attend functions and forums and take more active parts in this kind of thing. And political education within the political structure itself is also important. What I do is every Tuesday when Parliament is sitting, I will generally brief some MPs on issues. So, you know, sharing, developing their interest in policy making strengthens the party overall. And more importantly is that when we come to power, we actually will do something. I think that's important.
What would it take for more rakyat or political economy focused issues to be brought up in the day one?
I'm not sure exactly, but to us, we believe the rakyat is interested in issues which are typically fighting corruption, better governance. But if you keep harping at the same thing, then they say you tak ada modal lah, nothing new to bring in, right? So there is a constant pressure to talk about something else. I mean, My Sejahtera is a simple policy that everybody wants to have their, you know, 2 cents on it or 5 cents on it, right? But then the policy side, to me, we've reached a point where the fiscal space for any government, whether Pakatan or Barisan Nasional or Perikatan Nasional, is getting tighter and tighter. So we can't really dream of mega policies anymore. It's really all boils down to governance and making every cent count. And that is not sexy enough, I think, for many Malaysians out there.
In closing then, any final thoughts you'd like to leave us with on this issue?
Well, I think, Malaysian policy has never been a lot about left or right wing. It has been dominated by race most of the time. But I can see increasingly there is a space for, you know, for Malaysian type policy where the country has to unite together and say we have this foreign policy and we should stick to this foreign policy for the next 10, 20, 30 years. And we have this economic policy. We all want to develop sustainably. Let's find the formula for that. If we can sort out those things, and then leave the other bits around for debates, I think that'll be better. That's the only way to go for it. We must solidify one or two major policies, and then the rest, we can have policy differences.
Wong Chen, thanks for speaking with us today.
Thank you.
That was Wong Chen, Member of Parliament for Subang, weighing in on the thought process and preparation that goes into substantive policy debates. And we'd like to hear from you on exactly that. Would you like to see more substantive policy debates happen in our country? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. We do have this from Cheryl.
So Cheryl says, please increase the number of days of Parliament being in session first, and all MPs shouldn't be allowed to take any posts in GLC, so they would then have more time to debate and participate in policy making. All ministries must have bipartisan parliamentary committees.
So, I mean, those are all calls that we've heard being made a number of times when it comes to improving our parliamentary process, right? And I think a lot of that has to do with, one, essentially doing the job you're supposed to do, which is representing the people, but on the other hand, also then not having conflicts of interest, which is the other aspect of this.
That's very important. The conflict of interest one is a huge point. I think the first thing, Cheryl, that you're talking about, increasing the number of days of Parliament being in session, is actually very key. We have had this huge interruption in the middle of regular business for a while now, and that has also meant that a number of these policies have kind of just zipped past, right? And I think normalizing Parliament being in session, normalizing these sorts of public discussions, all of that is going to be very important.
Keep those thoughts coming. If you'd like to weigh in on the role of substantive policy debate, you can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. We do have on the line with us Mustafa. Good evening, Mustafa. What are your thoughts?
Hi, good evening. First and foremost, thank you, BFM, for raising the point about policies. I think we do need to have a lot more substantial policy debates, as rightly mentioned by the MP earlier. What are the main crux of the issue? And then we would need to address it. There's a lot of challenges now in the country. But more importantly, this policy is how do we carry out the execution part of it, the importance of the PACs, the Auditor General's reports, and so forth. I think it has to go end-to-end of this. And, I think this is a very important topic for all Malaysians. Thank you.
Mustafa, thanks for calling. If you'd like to weigh in, that number to call, 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. We're asking you whether you'd like to see more substantive policy debates happen in Malaysia. You've been listening to Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.